So today, we'll read a verse from Bhagavad Gita, I think, but we need someone to choose a verse, please. Can you do that? Or get someone to do it, or whatever. Okay, good. Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Gopi Jana Balava Giri Bharadhari. Gopi Jana Balava Giri Bharadhari. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanachare. Yamuna Tira Vanachare. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Gopi Jana Balava Giri Bharadhari. Gopi Jana Balava Giri Bharadhari. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanachare. Yamuna Tira Vanachare. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna,
Krishna Krishna Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Hare Rama. Jaya Prabhupada.
Jaya Prabhupada, 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 Jaya Sutta ki. Sankirtan Yajna ki. Gaur Premanande. All glories to the Dasamal devotees. All glories to the Dasamal devotees. All glories to the Dasamal devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada along with Srila Krishna. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Which verse is it actually? 27, okay. Welcome to our Sunday program today. It's very nice to be here with you all. Thank you all for coming. Today we will read a verse from Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Chapter 9, The Most Confidential Knowledge, Text 27. So we'll read the verse and the purport and say a few words about that, and then if there are any questions, we'll try and answer those questions. I think probably there'll be a sheet going around, is it? Yeah? So there'll be a question sheet going around. You can write down any question if you have. And then we'll have arati, and then prasadam will be served. And at some point, just around that time, or maybe a little later, I'm not exactly sure when, but just perhaps towards the end of prasadam, or maybe just after prasadam, then we are having a special ceremony. We're having a first grains ceremony for one child, the child of Pravesh and Meena. I think Meena is your cousin, is she? Yeah, Vishingananda Prabhu's cousin. So they have one child. What's the name of the child? Ramir. So he is now 6 or 8 months old, something like that, and he hasn't eaten any grains yet in this lifetime. So later on then, I think it's, I'm not sure exactly, but maybe around 5:30 or something like that or so, we're going to do that first grain ceremony. We will, his first grains, I think, will be some maha sweet rice from Sri Sri Nitai Gaura Hari. So that's a very nice way for him to have his first grains. And then we will do another little ceremony for him, and that is that we will present him with a copy of Srimad Bhagavatam, one of our main scriptures, and that's on one side, and on the other side, some money. And this is also an important ceremony for little children. And we will see what he is attracted to, whether he's going to be a devotional scholar, something like that, or maybe a devotional businessman, on the other hand. Let us hope the devotional part is there. Yes, so anyway, like this, we will do these things. I would say at approximately 5:30 or thereabouts. Anyway, we'll just see. And this is very nice. Nice ceremonies to do with little children. In our Vedic tradition, there are 11 main junctures in a person's life, where they go from one phase into another phase. So that point at which they switch between phases, that is called there are ceremonies. They're called samskars. Yeah. And the idea is that as you're going from one phase into your next phase, and it may be quite a different phase, so you have to be, you know, you have to be able to enter into that nicely and prepared to some extent and on a very auspicious note. Otherwise you may make the change, but you may be halfway still back in the other phase, although you're supposedly gone into the next phase. In material life, it's like that. No clear demarcations, or no, at least not very suitable preparations for the next phases. So we have these samskars in our Vedic tradition, and the basic idea is that through a particular function or ceremony, some particular event, which is done very specifically at that time and in those specific terms to prepare the child to enter into the, or person, not just children actually, to enter into the next phase. So these samskaras are done to make an impression. This is the idea. To make an impression in the mind. And on the basis of that impression, strong impression in the mind, then one can, as it were, just move into that next phase strongly and nicely. So this is the idea. There are 11 samskaras, beginning with Garbhadan, when the father and mother conceive the child. And the last one is the samskar at the time of death. Most of them are done in childhood. Second to last one is the vivaha samskar, the marriage ceremony, and last one is the death ceremony. So we're going to be doing these ceremonies then later on this afternoon. For the time being, we will read from Bhagavad Gita, chapter 9, The Most Confidential Knowledge, text 27. Yat karoshi yad ajnasi yad juhoshi dadasi yat yat tupasyasi konteya tat kurushva mad arapanam. Translation. Whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer or give away, and whatever austerities you perform, do that, O son of Kunti, as an offering to me. So I think as actually a type of samskar, this is not actually like one of the official or major samskars, but as a type of samskar, so we can all, as it were, just enter into the meaning of this verse, in order to make an impression within our minds. I think we'll repeat this verse. Is that okay? So try to repeat after me. Yat karoshi. Yad ajnasi. Yaj juhosi. Dadasi yat. Yat tapasyasi. Konteya tat kurushva mad arpanam. And we can repeat the translation also. Whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer or give away, and whatever austerities you perform, do that, O son of Kunti, as an offering to me, for making an impression on the mind, reciting mantras is very helpful. In fact, it is a very powerful way, actually, of making a strong impression on the mind. So, like we are chanting every day, those of us who are initiated at least, and some others, we're chanting 16 rounds a day of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, and that chanting of 16 rounds is meant to be done in a very focused way, not just as we are moving around here and there, doing this, doing that, that in the background the chanting is going on somewhere, but actually our mind is occupied elsewhere. Not like that. But we are meant to take the time, if we actually want to get the benefit which is there. It is not just for name and fame or something like that, just for social standing, that if we ask, who is chanting 16 rounds, you can put your hand up and then the others will think, oh, this must be an advanced devotee. It's not like that, but it's not just so one can get initiated for the same reason, just for some type of recognition in the devotee community, but actually it's for our well-being, spiritually, our eternal well-being, and it's actually a great necessity that when we chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, chanting on our beads, that we give our full attention, and for that period of time we're not doing other things, but we're doing just that, and all our attention, all our faculties, whatever we have, is given to that. Then we become, then that sound vibration penetrates deep into the heart, very deep into the heart. In the heart, of course, so many things have accumulated, so many other impressions. We're talking here about making a type of impression upon ourselves spiritually, some lasting impression for our change and betterment. But the fact is that through many lifetimes in this material world, so many impressions have accumulated within our hearts already, and they are already there, and they have already actually formed us as we are seen, as we are manifest as individuals in this lifetime, so far at least. Yes, because of all those accumulated impressions due to so many experiences, being exposed to so many influences, having had so many different types of association, all these things rub off to one degree or another and make impressions within our hearts. So in this lifetime, of course, we are all individuals. We have our individual personalities. But still, it is a fact that some of us, we all think a little differently. Our attitudes are somewhat different. Some of us may be very easygoing, and some problem may come, or even someone may try to create a problem, but we may not care. We can easily turn our back on it and walk away. Others of us may be easily disturbed. Someone sometimes may just look at us in a certain way, or say something not even clear perhaps, but we may interpret it in a certain way. And then before we know, our mind is just spinning around in a disturbed mood, angry mood, or some sort of mood of anxiety, isn't it? Different of us, of course, are made up in different ways. But all of us, we have certain types of psychologies already built in. So how did it get built in? That is from all these impressions. So in Krishna consciousness, as I said, like with our chanting, for example, the idea is to do all the various activities which are there to be done in Krishna consciousness. And that means, first of all, chanting Hare Krishna. To do all these things in very focused ways so that impressions are made in the heart, so that whatever has accumulated through the so many lifetimes, so that that can be penetrated, cut through and dissipated. So this is what the process of sadhana bhakti is about: cutting the knot or knots which have built up in the heart, all these material influences and the impressions they have made, and how they have formed us as we are perceived now as material individuals. So yes, if we do it nicely, like this chanting, Srila Prabhupada, there's one purport in Chaitanya Charitamrita, in the chapter describing the passing away of Srila Haridas Thakur, in which Srila Prabhupada explains that in Krishna consciousness, at least for one who is committed, there are many duties. And Srila Prabhupada says, one has to chant. One may have to worship the deity. One may have to manage some aspect of the movement's activities. One may have to clean. So many activities are there. as standard duties in Krishna consciousness. So Srila Prabhupada says there very clearly that of all these duties, the first duty is to chant Hare Krishna 16 rounds. Yes, for those who are committed at least. So by chanting these mantras here, like these verses in Bhagavad Gita, if you could try it. If you read even just one chapter of Bhagavad Gita, what to speak of if you tried to recite the entire book, just one chapter, the verses only, and you really try and do that with fixed attention as much as you can, then you'll find, you can practically guarantee, by the time you finish, you'll feel like your brain has had a little bit of a spring cleaning. It's a fact. You'll notice some clearing effect has taken place. So therefore, we recited this verse. All right, so I'll repeat the translation and then I'll read the purport. Whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer or give away, and whatever austerities you perform, do that, O son of Kunti, as an offering to me. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Thus, it is the duty of everyone to mold his life in such a way that he will not forget Krishna in any circumstance. Everyone has to work for maintenance of his body and soul together. And Krishna recommends herein that one should work for him, that one should work for him. Everyone has to eat something to live. Therefore, he should accept the remnants of foodstuffs offered to Krishna. Any civilized man has to perform some religious ritualistic ceremonies. Therefore, Krishna recommends, do it for me. And this is called archana. Everyone has a tendency to give something in charity. Krishna says, give it to me. And this means that all surplus money accumulated should be utilized in furthering the Krishna consciousness movement. Nowadays, people are very much inclined to the meditational process, which is not practical in this age. But if anyone practices meditating on Krishna 24 hours a day by chanting the Hare Krishna mantra round his beads, he is surely the greatest meditator and the greatest yogi. As substantiated by the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Yat karoshi yarajnasi yaj jahoshi dadasi yat yat tapasyasi konteya tat kurushva mad arpanam. Whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer or give away, and whatever austerities you perform, do that, O son of Kunti, as an offering to me. Om Jnana Tamarandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshu Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapatantikam Vanchikalpaturubhyascha Kripasindubhyevacha Padidanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Vasati Gaura Bhaktivrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. This is a very nice verse in Bhagavad Gita in which Lord Krishna is making it very clear what is the basic or best approach to take in Krishna consciousness. what is the goal, what we should be striving to achieve. That is, we should be striving to achieve our complete dedication to Krishna. Ultimately, this is the goal. In material existence, of course, everything is upside down. This is a fact. In material existence, everything is... This material world is made up. There are different parts of us. First of all, there is the soul. This we know, Lord Krishna explains this in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita. Dehino smanyata dehe komaram yovanam jara tata dehantara praptir diras tatra na muyati. That as the embodied soul continually passes in this body from boyhood to youth to old age, the soul similarly passes into another body at death. But the sober person or the self-realized soul is not affected by that change. I wonder if our little friend could just somehow or other. So, there in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna is explaining that we're all eternal spirit souls. We're living within these bodies. But actually, we're not this body. This body is just like a vehicle. And just as today we have all come here, most of us have come here in different vehicles. So, when we arrived here, we stepped out of our vehicle. And that was not a traumatic experience. So, this body is also like a vehicle. And for someone who really understands what is the situation, then, when that person leaves the vehicle, when they leave their body, in other words, when they die, that will also not be a traumatic experience. Srishinatai Gaura Hari Kid. So for one who is properly prepared and properly situated, then that change of vehicle at the time of death is not going to be traumatic any more than, of course, we've already given that example of traveling in a motor car and then stepping out when you reach the end of the ride. But Lord Krishna, in that particular verse there, in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, he gives the example of how, during the course of this life, our body has already changed a number of times, from childhood to youth to adulthood, middle age, old age. These are all very distinct phases that our bodies go through. And there's very big differences, just like we all know, little children as we see here, little body. But 20 years later, when they're young adults, then it is quite a different body. In fact, Lord Krishna, his point is that it is actually another body. Just as I now have my body, you have your bodies, and my body obviously is completely distinct from your body. They're not at all one body, but we have here a number of totally independent bodies. So in the same terms, Lord Krishna's point is that your body when you are a little child and your body when you are perhaps in your mid-twenties or so, they're actually two totally distinct things. Yes. As much distinct as my body sitting here right now is distinct from your body sitting here right now, totally distinct. So in exactly those terms, Lord Krishna's point is like that.
that when you're a little child, 3 or 4 years old or so, you have one body. But when you are an adult, you actually have another body completely. It is not simply that that little body has transformed and so now you have the same body, but it's just altered to some extent. It's not exactly like, it's not like that. But you actually have a different thing, a different body. It is that clear cut, in fact. So, Lord Krishna's point then is that for the self-realized person, very sober person who clearly understands the reality of things, then when the time of death comes and they leave that old body or whatever body they happen to be inhabiting, so a Krishna conscious old person, when they die and they leave that old body, then the experience for them of that change of body, of leaving that vehicle behind, that change is no more traumatic than the experiences we have all had, at least those of us who are adults, because we have all changed bodies like that from childhood. We are all now basically adults. So none of us can recall that as we changed from that little body, now we have that adult body. None of us, of course, recall at any point feeling shocked. Oh, my childhood body. Oh, no. Not at all, is it? Not at all. Actually, there's been no trauma, no emotional experience whatsoever. It's just happened and it's been totally unnoticed even. Completely unnoticed. So someone who is really very advanced spiritually, or not even necessarily very, very advanced, in the first, if you're familiar with our Bhagavad Gita, you would know that the translation for that particular verse, which I'm referring to in the second chapter, Dehinosmin Yata Dehe, that very famous verse, that in the very early versions of Bhagavad Gita, the translation was a little different. You remember that? You know the difference? In that first edition, early edition, it said that the self-realized soul is not bewildered by the change. The word, the Sanskrit word is dira. Yes. So it was presented to us then in English as self-realized. However, later on the devotees, Jayadvaita Maharaj in fact, went through all the tapes of Srila Prabhupada dictating the translations and the purports of Bhagavad Gita. And he found that Srila Prabhupada did not use the term self-realized. And it is a fact, if you are familiar with Sanskrit a bit, then this word dira we come across fairly frequently. It is not an uncommon word in our scriptures. And this word dira does not directly translate as self-realized. Arguably it could be interpreted like that if used in certain circumstances, but in a very direct sense the translation of the word dira is not self-realized. That is too strong, in fact, a translation. And Srila Prabhupada, when he translated that verse, he did not use the word self-realized. That in order to be able to tolerate the change of body at the time of death, you have to be self-realized. That's very advanced, or perfect, more or less. No. Srila Prabhupada used the word sober. And in fact, the word dira, it means sober, self-controlled. This is what the word dira means. So, It was just that the editor, Srila Prabhupada's editor at that time, was a devotee named Hayagriva. He was a professor. He had a PhD in English literature. And he was, you know, like a very poetic type. So, for example, oftentimes if you read that old Bhagavad Gita, you'll see that where Vyasadeva, who in fact is the person who's put pen to paper to record the conversation, where Vyasadeva says, Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, the translation given in a number of cases is, the Blessed Lord said. So it sounds quite nice in a certain sense, but there is a problem. Well, there are a couple of problems. One is that Srila Prabhupada did not say the Blessed Lord said. It was this poetic editor who decided to give it a little bit of flair or color or something, add something to the taste, that he would use, you know, a little flowery terminology. So that's one problem. It wasn't what Srila Prabhupada said. Srila Prabhupada basically said, the Supreme Personality of Godhead said, which is what Sri Bhagavan Uvacha means in very direct terms. But it is also a problem in another sense, that in order to be blessed, there has to be someone to bless you. And who is going to bless Krishna? Nobody. He is the ultimate giver of blessings. And there is no one to give him blessings. So in fact, what is being said there is that in order to tolerate the experience of death and remain fixed in Krishna consciousness and pass through it without being disturbed, or at least without being carried away and just getting lost and bewildered in it, you don't need to be self-realized. Of course, if you can be, all the better. But what you need to be is dhira. You need to be very sober and very self-controlled in your spiritual life. Of course, that is a somewhat advanced platform, but it is not necessarily as advanced as self-realized. That's very advanced. Yes. So, Lord Krishna is explaining there in that verse that just as we have been through these changes of bodies, those of us here who are adults, we've already been through these changes of body in the course of this life, and we have emerged, we have gone through those experiences of change of body, we have emerged on the other side with the changed body and been totally unaffected by it. In fact, we hardly noticed it was happening. So, a person who's nicely fixed up in Krishna consciousness, they can also pass through the time of death, being unaffected. And if they remember Krishna, well, they can go back to Godhead. Yes, that is the perfection of life. So, the point we are getting at is that people generally they're molding their lives in certain ways. They're dedicating their lives to what? Generally, they're dedicating their lives to themselves. They're working hard. They're working hard to get money. For what? For themselves. They might say, many would say that they're working hard to get money for their families. But the fact is that they identify with their families. That if their family is happy, they feel happy. If the family is not happy, they are not happy. So it adds up to the same thing, that they are doing it for themselves. Because they know that if I don't work hard and supply money for my family, I will end up unhappy. Because my family will be unhappy. and we are so intrinsically linked. This is what Srila Prabhupada called extended selfishness. Extended selfishness. It's just like, you know, some parents, when they were children, they tried to be successful, for example, at sport, when they were at school, tried to be a successful cricketer or something. But maybe, even though they wanted to and they tried to, but they couldn't. So as when their children are growing up, then the son, they want him to become a cricketer. And then they want him to be successful. And then through him, they will enjoy that as if it's their success. Isn't it? It works like this. It often works like this. Extended selfishness. It adds up to the same thing. That the ultimate issue is that I want to get pleasure out of it. Yes. One either directly, myself, or indirectly through these others, but because the connection with the others is so strong, and actually it's unbreakable and inseparable identification, so when, as they experience, I experience, so if they experience happiness, I experience happiness, and it comes down to that. Yes. So that is material life. That is material life. Everyone is dedicated like that, working hard for themselves, either directly or indirectly. Yes. And you can extend your area of identification, what you identify with, and the experiences of which affect you. You can extend that greatly. Like you can extend it to your country. If your country, South Africa, loses the rugby match against the All Blacks, then we New Zealanders, we may say just, well, you know, we may think that now we are better than all of you. And you South Africans may think, you know, something else. Isn't it? So, or like, I think it was Louis the 14th, who was one of the old French kings who really got very carried away with himself. He said, France est moi. France is me. Yes. He identified the whole country as being part and parcel of himself. So if France was attacked, he was attacked. Oh, he got very upset. So anyway, one way or another, you can meditate on this a little, the implications, and how it may actually be operating in reality in your own case. But the fact is that we identify with these bodies. And as far as we're concerned, my business in life is to achieve happiness for me. Either directly or indirectly, or both directly and indirectly, it adds up to that. We are dedicated. So Krishna consciousness, as Lord Krishna is explaining here, Krishna consciousness is a polar opposite, you could say. It is exactly the other way round. That in Krishna consciousness, we, the devotee, in pure Krishna consciousness at least, that very exalted state, even beyond just being sober or self-controlled, but that perfect state of Krishna consciousness means that I only want to please Krishna and nothing else. And as far as my pleasure is concerned, doesn't matter at all. Is actually not a consideration. Not even a small consideration is actually no consideration. Simply to please Krishna. The materialists, they think, if they have any interest in God, like Srila Prabhupada says here, any civilized man has to perform some religious ritualistic ceremony or activity. And we see that at least amongst the cultured people, amongst the decent people, everyone has some sort of religious program of some sort, whether they're white people, Indian people, African people, Chinese people, makes no difference. Amongst the more cultured elements, or even just the majority of society, you'll see there's a clear-cut propensity towards some religious practice. But generally, even for those people, they're thinking their religious practice means how I can worship God to get things for me. That I go to the church and I pray, give me this day my daily bread. Yes, you see? Good idea. No, not a good idea, but a popular idea. Yes, or in Islam, actually I don't know how they put it there, but it all, I think, boils down to the same thing. In Hinduism, of course, as we've mentioned many times, they say, give me a house and a car and a color TV, Om Jai Jagadisha Hare. Oh, we've said that too many times. We'll think of, find something else to say. But anyway, it is like that. It is like that. That if God figures, then he figures as sort of an accessory or a facility for achieving what is the main thing, which is my enjoyment. Yeah. He is a sort of functional aspect of my program, which is to enjoy. But Krishna consciousness, pure Krishna consciousness, as Lord Krishna is explaining here, is something different. It means everything for Krishna and nothing for me, or not exactly nothing for me, but for me is just whatever Krishna gives. Whatever it may be, that's up to him. I am not going to make any case in those terms to Krishna. I am simply going to leave it to Krishna. He can supply. He can supply to me as he sees fit, because he knows better. Krishna actually knows us better than we know ourselves. One of the great problems in Western society is that people do not understand themselves, even in ordinary, everyday, material terms, so they have to go to the psychiatrist. I read a few years ago in some American magazine that in their lifetime, every American citizen will have to go to a psychiatrist or psychologist at least once in their life. Every single one, the report said, meaning that every single one of them, at least at one point, is going to find themselves so bewildered in their lives and disturbed and just overwhelmed by everything that they're just going to lose control and have to go and take shelter of someone to get themselves sorted out. Yes. So, and what to speak of many people who just have ongoing problems in that regard. So this is there in material life. This is there in material life, that a very difficult way of life. People are very disturbed. That selfish way of life is not really working very well. So Lord Krishna, Jai Shri Shri Nitai Gaura Hare Ki Jai. So for the devotee, pure devotee, the devotee feels that whatever I do, I should do for Krishna. And for me, I'll just accept whatever Krishna sends, because Krishna knows better. Krishna, as we said, knows us better than we know us. He knows what we need better than how we know what we may need. In fact, we are prone to think that we need many things. We think we need them. Actually, we don't need them. In fact, in many cases, they're detrimental to us. But we think we need them, and we make some strategy and plan and execute some plan of action to get those things. So this is a great shame. We do not understand ourselves. We do not understand what we need. Actually, we are all thinking. Everyone is thinking, I am this body. And seeing I am this body, therefore I must dedicate my life to getting things for this body and looking after this body so this body can be as nicely situated as possible. But actually I am not this body, as we have already explained. I am the eternal spirit soul within this body, and as such I have needs. I have needs in those terms. But when I am thinking I am this body and I am simply dedicating myself 100% to gratifying my body alone, then that means I am completely overlooking and missing out on what I need. So if we're doing like that, we shouldn't be too surprised if we end up unhappy. It wouldn't be surprising, would it? In fact, you would only expect that. Srila Prabhupada, in fact, gave the example, like I said, of how the body is a vehicle. Now, of course, if you have a vehicle, you may not think that it is you. You may accept it as just your vehicle, a separate thing to you. But just because it is not you doesn't mean that you abuse it or you don't care about it and just let it fall to pieces and disintegrate. No. If it is your possession, you look after it. So we have to look after our body. But we should not make this mistake of identifying with the body and thinking that the needs of the body are my needs, because then we'll get very messed up. And as I said, Srila Prabhupada gave an example in this regard. Srila Prabhupada himself gave the example that you may be driving in your motor car, you drive into the petrol station to fill the car up with petrol, you do that. Srila Prabhupada said that if you are thinking that you are your vehicle and that the needs of the vehicle are your needs, then when they have filled up the petrol tank, you will then open your mouth and tell them to fill you up. So the consequences of that obviously would be disastrous, actually. Be terrible. So this is the principle, that if we think that something which is not our need, actually it is not good for us at all. It is the need of something else. But if we think that it is our need and we force it upon ourselves, then what will the result be? It can only be a disaster. How could it be anything else? It's a crazy situation, actually. Completely crazy situation. Just as it's completely crazy to tell the petrol attendant to fill you up. It's just totally ludicrous. But actually, material life means that. Yes. That is what material life means. It means we have adopted a crazy way of life. But unfortunately, we are affected by the craziness. You know, when you're dealing with crazy people, I mean, people who are actually insane by material terms, psychologically damaged people, schizophrenics, people like that. One of the main obstacles to helping them is that they don't think they need help. And in fact, when dealing with practically any person who has practically any problem of practically any sort, the first problem or first thing you have to address is you have to be able to, the person has to be able to understand that they have a problem. Because if a person has no problem, you can't help them if they don't need help. I mean, in the sense, if they think they have no problem, they become unhelpable. Yes. So this is one problem. I just had an experience. Well, every now and then we have to try and help people who are, you know, mentally disordered. But I just had an experience recently with one person